I'm Charlie Osborne, Editor-at-Large at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defence Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing provider that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here and thanks everyone who tunes in each week.
So, completing a tax return is a headache for many Americans. However, in recent years, the process has become a headache too for the Internal Revenue Service, which now has to deal with escalating rates of fraud. According to a recent US Department of the Treasury report, the IRS flagged more than 1 million tax returns as potentially suspicious or related to identity theft during the latest tax season as of March 2nd. The associated refunds would have been worth about $6.3 billion. Now, Roger, the IRS expected to receive around 167 million individual tax returns this year. And so in your opinion, is 1 million potentially dodgy ones really a big deal?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know. I guess the bigger question to answer that question would be how much real fraud is there? You know, how much are they picking up? But certainly, let me say that in the U.S., at least, tax fraud, digital tax fraud, where you have these fraudulent filers using online, you know, filing, has been going on for over a decade and a half. It's been a really, really big problem for a long time. And so Brian Krebs, he's a really great cybersecurity journalist. I think his website's krebsonsecurity.com. He's been writing about it probably for a decade and a half. He was the first person that probably brought it to my attention. And it was, what was amazing back then was that a lot of it at the time was going through Intuit. They're one of the major online software providers. I use them, have for a lot of years, and they were getting a ton of this fraud. And let me say, the people that commit these frauds, it's typically not even individuals, although I'm sure it is individuals, but a lot of times it's these large groups of people, sometimes up to dozens of people. They'll collect in apartments and houses that they either rent, and they'll, they get the information, they buy or somehow obtain the necessary information it would take to file a tax return. So a person's name and address, social security number and stuff. And they get together in these large parties. They literally call them parties, and they sit there and file hundreds to thousands of tax returns, fraudulent tax returns. And, probably a decade and a half ago, there were some whistleblowers from inside of, TurboTax Intuit, which is out of Plano, Texas. And the whistleblowers inside employees said, hey, we know we're able to use metrics to identify these fraudulent returns. It's, you know, the same individuals filing these fraudulent returns are getting the information sent to the same account. You know, it'd be really abnormal for a ton of these fraudulent returns to be filed for the payments to be made to the same bank account, you know, if it wasn't fraud. So, I mean, you have tax preparers, tax preparers of all type that, you know, occasionally get caught up in fraudulent returns. But the whistleblowers at Intuit TurboTax were saying, hey, we can identify these people because they're making these really, you know, they're picking ordinary people's income tax returns, which ordinarily in America, you try to make sure that you don't get that you don't pay too much, you don't get too much back. If you're doing your taxes somewhat correctly, you're either getting a modest return or you're having to pay a modest payment. That means you've kind of figured out correctly what your taxes are for the year. But these, you know, fraudsters are filing so they pull up a person's account who would typically only get a grand or two refund in a given year, and they're suddenly asking for $200,000 refund. They would make this claim, you know, that this person had some particular tax refund reason. And so the whistleblowers in Intuit I think it was a couple of them, said, hey, we can actually, from the inside, identify these fraudulent returns. They have, you know, hallmarks of being fraudulent returns. They are suddenly asking for these large refunds that were not asked for in the previous period. And they're all the refunds are going to either one bank account or a couple of different bank accounts where a lot of other fraudulent returns are going to. So we can actually identify them. And the reason why we're not removing them is that the fraudulent taxpayers are paying $75 a pop for the software, the service, just like you and I would. So the whistleblowers are saying Intuit could actually identify the fraud, minimize the fraud, but because it was profitable to Intuit, you know, they were being paid the same whether it was fraudulent return or not. And Intuit denied it and said, no, that wasn't the case. And I think those employees were fired and there's a bunch of hubbub about it. But what I do know is that in any cyber crime, until you change the financial incentives, even for the legitimate players involved, in this case, Intuit, until it came to the light of day, until you had people changing the finances so that, hey, Intuit, we're not going to pay you for a fraudulent return, until until they changed the mechanics and the finances so that the legitimate parties couldn't profit off of this fraud, it didn't change the equation. But then something happened. I can't remember whether it was a law or a threat of law, but eventually it was said to Intuit, and I'm sure corporate governors in their own, you know, wanting to fix the problem and get out of the news headlines. But, you know, eventually the mechanics and the finances changed so that Intuit wasn't going to profit off of these tax returns. And so Intuit was able to put a block, you know, and figure out who these fraudulent returns were and significantly diminish the crime. And the bad guys simply, you know, these gangs simply moved on to other software, other services. Sometimes they even manually filed them. But typically they have these house parties where a dozen or dozens of people will come and just spend their days filing these fraudulent tax returns. And, you know, there's some mastermind of each group that's getting the bulk of the money. I read some stories, and this again is back in the day, where there were actually some of the hardcore gangs in America, you know, the Crips and the Bloods and stuff, that law enforcement would stop these gang members and they'd find them with, tax refund information, fraudulent tax refund information in their car. So it was actually starting to fund, you know, at a large scale, the gangs and stuff like that. And so it's really, at least for a decade and a half, let me say tax fraud, filing fraud's been going on, you know, for as long as we've had taxes. But it really is difficult. The people that get caught up in these fraudulent tax returns, the real victims, they not only don't get their real tax refund, but I've heard it can take 8 months to a year, or even beyond a year, for them to actually get their real refunds or information filed. You know, usually the victims don't know anything's happened until they go to file their tax return and the IRS flat says, no, you've already been paid. You know, you've already filed, you know, you've already gotten your refund. And it takes them a long time, you know, to get that money. So if they have money coming to them, so it can be a real, you know, a real financial strife on them. Brian Krebs for years has said, hey, you can go into the IRS now. The IRS has created, you know, this special number known as a personal identity number. It's called the Identity Protection Personal Identification Number. Leave it to the IRS to make even a number complicated sounding. But supposedly you can go to the IRS, you can register this particular number, and then you can't file your taxes without knowing this number. So if the fraudsters don't know this number, then they can't file your taxes. Although recently, in the last year or so, Krebs has shown that it's not that hard to, using the IRS's own system, to retrieve that particular number, the identity protection, personal identification number. So who's like, okay, you've got the number, but you've made it so that in an online way, the attackers can pull up that number. And so Brian Krebs has really been at the forefront of at least alerting people to the problem. I congratulate the IRS for all the accounts they flagged. And again, it shouldn't be that hard. Again, all you have to do is look for accounts that all of a sudden have this significant refund and they're also going to a new bank account. That would be the two biggest signs of fraudulent returns. Let me say, when I say it should be easy, I'm sure if the IRS just did a query on what I just said, that suddenly a large refund going to a new bank account, I bet, out of all those legitimate returns, like 10% of them meet that criteria. So they've got to do things beyond that, which I think is in the aggregate, you're noticing a lot of refunds going to a particular place or to a particular, not only a particular bank account, but a particular bank. Now, I've even heard that these groups, these tax fraud parties, will move up and down the coast. They'll move up and down the East Coast, up and down the West Coast. They even have backdoor channels and chat sessions with different groups to figure out what does and doesn't work. So if all of a sudden, these tax fraud parties, they start to get a lot of these returns turned down, the leaders of these members and leaders of these groups will quickly figure out what's causing the problem, what's causing the return to get flagged or denied. And they quickly shift, and figure out what is it that's catching the shift, and they move and do something else. It's just a huge, big problem. So I think it's fantastic the IRS, stopped more than a million of these tax returns. You wonder how big the problem is beyond that. And then I wonder why it didn't happen 15 years ago.
So you mentioned these party houses. To your knowledge, are they all sort of local and centralized to the US, or is this something that also global cyber criminals are looking into?
Yeah, let me say, unfortunately, I don't know how that is globally, but I'm sure it does happen globally in other places. I think it's more common in the United States for a lot of reasons. We have 300 million people, and you have to it's complicated taxes. I'm sure some portion of people that have fraud committed against them never know that they had fraud because they never file their taxes. I don't know what the percentage is, but there's a large percentage of people that never file their taxes or don't. Like my mother, God rest her soul, didn't file her own taxes for like 10 or 20 years. And that's a common thing you'll hear in the States. Somebody has a parent or a friend that hasn't filed taxes forever. And so if the fraudsters are using those people that, that don't file the taxes, then it's not going to be caught at all by the person. I don't know if it's done globally, but I have to think anything that works locally, if it can be done globally, they'll go after it as well. Without knowing, I have to think there's got to be some portion of it. But I think like a lot of cybercrime really originates here, grows strong here, let's say like ransomware, and then moves out to other countries. But where it's not going to work is in a country where you have really simple taxes. If all you get taxed on is your earned income and that's reported to the government, and they pay it out, that would be harder to create fraud with. Big portion of the fraud, that the reason why it's easier here is that there's 1,000 different ways to get a refund or change the amount. Like there in the U.S. And by the way, let me say, strangely, early on in my career back in 1989, I passed my CPA, certified public accountant exam. So I was a CPA tax person early on in my career, but there are many, many reasons why your income gets what we call it adjusted gross income. So there's all these reasons why you can get your real income adjusted that will then almost always result in some sort of bigger refund than you would have otherwise gotten. And I don't think most other countries, their taxes have the literally hundreds or thousands of reasons to what we call adjust your income to get to the adjusted gross income figure. So it probably, if it does happen other places, it probably just isn't as active. You don't have as many people filing taxes. It's not as complicated. It's just not as many ways for them to create the fraud. So, if it is occurring, it probably isn't that big of a deal in most other countries, at least that I know about.
And when cyber criminals hope to file a few thousand fraudulent tax returns, what information is needed to impersonate their victim, and how do they acquire this?
Yeah, I mean, so I've not done it myself, but you know, as far as I know, you need their names, you need their home address, and you need their social security numbers or taxpayer identification number. So it's really not a whole lot of information. You have information, data brokers, both illegal and legal, that sell that information online that anybody can buy. Certainly the dark web, there's tons of criminal forums where they sell that information. It's very common. Also, it's phished, right? A lot of people, the fraudsters will do a phishing attack in an email. They'll claim to be the IRS. They'll send you to they'll claim that, you know, oh, you've got a refund, or you're being, you know, you're going to be audited by the IRS, and they'll have you log in and provide that same information. It's a really common phishing attack. So if they're not buying it from a data broker, which is what most of them are doing, then they're creating spam phishing campaigns of their own and collecting that information. But the vast majority of them are really not that. So the fraudulent tax return party groups aren't that, you know, they aren't that knowledgeable. They're usually, a lot of the people that are coming to file these returns, let me say it's actually rampant on certain college campuses in America. There are certain colleges where these party groups form, and it's actually the individuals and the members of these gangs actually come from sororities and fraternities and college groups. That's how they meet and form friendships. And then, you know, this one person, the leader or some member, is like, oh, we're making millions of dollars. And they are. And so the person's like, well, how can I get in on it? Especially if your odds of being arrested are really small. You know, you're more likely to be struck by lightning than get arrested for cybercrime today. But there are people. I've also read stories of people that were caught and arrested and put in jail. I think the terms of jail that I've seen that they served was a couple of years. They would be sentenced for a first time offense to like somewhere between 2 to 7 years, and they would serve somewhere between like 2 and 4 years in jail. And a lot of those people came out and did it again. But you know, it's a really common crime here. I don't want to say it's not like as common as regular robbery or something, but there seems to be, strangely, in some communities and some college campuses, it seems to be an acceptable way to make side money, you know, and these groups and sororities and fraternities get involved in it. And then they, you know, almost always these groups eventually go down, and maybe the leaders and some of the members move between different groups. But eventually, you know, that's the problem with robbing banks, is that if you keep on robbing banks, one day you're going to get caught and arrested. So eventually a lot of these people are arrested, are identified, you know, when they go to the bank to pick up, you know, the check or open a bank or something like that. Eventually law enforcement is tracking a lot of this, but, you know, I'd say as long as people are making millions of dollars and it's, you know, it's taken a long time, you know, I assume they operate for years without getting arrested, that you're always going to, you know, once you arrest one, you just have another one come from behind. And then they're traveling again. They're traveling and living in different places, moving up and down the East and West Coast according to different seasons and things like that. It's a, you know, it's a very lucrative crime, takes a long time to arrest the people. You know, but eventually, you know, they do get arrested. But by then you've got to, you know, it's like arresting a drug dealer. That's great. You arrest a drug dealer and, you know, he's got 10 sergeants waiting to take his place.
And when you consider, I mean, when it comes to everything from people on college campuses to sophisticated cyber criminals compromising this system, do you think the current IRS tax system is fit for purpose, or do you think that we need to have some security enhancements and rather sharpish?
Yeah, we definitely need security enhancements. I mean, there's a kind of a joke that the IRS's software is super, a lot of it is super, super old. They've been trying to upgrade it for years. Hundreds of millions, billions of dollars have been spent to upgrade it. The last large upgrade failed, and the company that flamed out got sued. In America, there's this strange political situation where we all have to file taxes, but one of the political parties literally makes it, they actually try to kind of defund the IRS. They try to make it harder for the IRS to do auditing and to find fraud and stuff like that. And so the IRS is intentionally underfunded, making their long, long lines and waits for questions harder for everybody to file taxes. Just recently, a year or two ago, the administration actually said, oh, we need to upgrade the, you know, the system, the IRS system. We need to have more employees and things like that. And the other political party has spent a lot of their time trying to reverse that funding. You know, right now in America, we're even facing what's called a debt ceiling fight. And one of the things they're arguing over is one side wants to defund the IRS and take away the funding that made it easier for them to detect fraud. So it's a political fight. It's a technological fight. And again, the IRS, you know, I hear that a lot of their systems are like from the 1970s. The IRS is trying to do the best they can. But, you know, when you're being defunded and you're part of a political pond, you know, between multiple parties and things like that, it can just really get, there's a lot of people that really enjoy that the IRS doesn't find fraud, right? There's a lot of people committing fraud. I think the average American doesn't want to be audited. You know, most of us don't, like, I don't think I've ever lied on my taxes, but I don't want to be audited. But there's always this fear that if they did audit you, they'd find something and you'd end up owing more money and a penalty or something. So there's a large constituent that likes that they're not efficient at what they do. So that's you opened up a whole can of wax there. And that, you know, it's a strange thing with the IRS. Some people just don't want them to be better at finding fraud.
Well, especially they've got something to hide, right?
Yeah. And let me say, you know, I've got friends that I know for sure lie to the IRS. I mean, it's not super rare. And I would say that it is probably not uncommon for a lot of Americans. I bet, you know, I don't know what the percentage would be. There's a large percentage of Americans that probably cheat a little on their taxes. And, you know, so I think there is, you know, I think there's wide support for the IRS not being better at identifying fraud. And that's part of the problem. I mean, it's literally, you know, one of the two major political parties in America is trying to make the IRS less efficient at finding fraud. Thank goodness I don't work for a company where we have those sort of pressures on you, where you're literally being incentivized to be less good at finding fraud.
In England, we call it skimming off the top. And an accountant once told me that HMRC, our own tax service, if you like, knows that it happens and the economy actually runs on it.
Yeah. It's certainly probably the same here. And who knows what would happen if we got a lot more accurate. But, you know, to kind of bring it full circle, I am super excited that the IRS has, you know, flagged more than 1 million accounts. I hope we arrest every single one of these, you know, tax return fraud people that, you know, are doing multiple fraudulent returns. I hope they all get caught, identified, caught, and put in jail.
As do I. Thank you for joining us today, Roger, and sharing your thoughts.
Sure, thank you.
I'm Charlie Osborne, editor-at-large at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing provider that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com.